The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, I am back from my awesome vacation in Hawaii. It was as great as I thought it was going to be. I was a beach bum for the entire week. I have never been so lazy and done so little in my life, and it felt fucking fantastic. I just sat on the beach and went in the ocean, and I even got a fucking tan, which is just crazy for my white ass, but I did. I didn't even get burnt, which was also great. But Maui, such a beautiful place. Beach was beautiful. Food was great. And let me tell you, it was weird as fuck to watch the Lakers at 2:30 in the afternoon. I mean, in Austin time, the games would start at 7:30 at night. So getting to see the Lakers at 2:30 in the afternoon was actually freaking awesome for me just because I wasn't falling asleep. But unfortunately, the Lakers looked as shitty as they have all season long. And they didn't even get one win. In that Western Conference Finals, which was extremely disappointing. But yes, when I'm on vacation, I'm not missing playoff basketball. Sorry. It didn't like interrupt any of my vacation. Actually worked out perfectly for my schedule for most of the games, especially games 2 and 3. Game 4, I really didn't see much of just because how they played in the first 3 games. I didn't have high hopes for what they were going to do in game 4. Also, I went ziplining that day, and so we were kind of like on the other side of the island. So like we were heading back when it just started. Then we also went to go get food. So I pretty much missed the majority of game 4, but it doesn't sound like I missed much in that one. But it was weird to watch them on at 2:30 in the afternoon. And like I said, I was not missing playoff basketball, especially, you know, I did not expect the Lakers to make the playoffs this year. You know, they started the season out 2-10. So it's insane that they made it this far. Now, I won't say, oh, yeah, that's a moral victory because we're the Lakers and we have 17 championships. So if you don't win a championship, the season is a failure. But, hey, I was shocked they made it that far. They just did not show up in the majority of those games. I mean, there was a couple times in game 1 and 4 where it looked like they had a shot, but in games 2 and 3, they pretty much were getting obliterated. In game 2, the start of the game, wasn't too bad, but then it just Denver ran away with it. But Denver right now is sitting pretty and waiting for the winner of the Eastern Conference Finals, which we have a game 7 tonight. I actually missed the first three games of this series just because I didn't really I wasn't going to take that much time out of my vacation to make sure I caught both of these. I was definitely going to do it for the Lakers because that's my team. But the Eastern Conference Finals, I actually did not see the first three games. I caught the scores and the stats and everything and just kind of saw how it was going. And obviously, playoff Jimmy was in full playoff mode. Now the Miami Heat are starting to fall apart. And I really think in game 6, not only did they lose the game, but I think they have now officially lost the series. Game 7 is tonight in Boston. And of course, the Heat can win it, but I think just the way they lost in game 6 really just gutted them because essentially, you know, the Celtics were ahead this entire game in game 6. And then finally in the fourth quarter, the Heat started to get it going, started to chip away at the lead and started to get really close. Just in the last few seconds of the game, Jimmy Butler got fouled, and it was a 3-point foul. So he was able to go up to the line, and at this point, the Heat were down 1-0. They ended up 103. So I think it was like 100 to 102-100. That's right. So the Heat are down by 3 points, or by 2 points, and if Jimmy gets all three, then hey, they've got a 1-point lead. Well, guess what? Jimmy knocked down all three field all three free throws, and so the Miami Heat go up 1 point, 103-102, and there's only 3 seconds left in the, on the clock. So that actually is plenty of time in basketball time, especially for a team like the Celtics, because they have great shooters, but they also have great rebounders. And that's what would come into play in this one. And, you know, Jimmy Butler, he was not having that great of a game in this one, except for sinking those three free throws. And so you're thinking, damn, all Miami has to do is make the stop. It looked like they made the stop because the Celtics would pull up for a three-pointer. I can't recall if it was Tatum who made the shot or somebody else, but somebody threw up a three, missed the shot. White, the guy was there. Like I just said, rebounding is a huge thing for the Celtics, and that's what happened. Derek White was in the perfect position to get the rebound, and he threw the ball up so quick that it was tough to tell if he won this game or if he knocked the shot down. White, of course, is saying, I knocked the shot down. But in real time, it looked like he just missed it. And so the Heat fans are just going insane. And then the win is gutted from them and taken from them right then and there on replay. You could see just out of his hands right before the red goes off around the backboard, and it counts. And the Boston Celtics go on to win 104-103. They were down 3-0 in this series, and now it's tied up at 3. Game 7 is tonight in Boston, as I said. And I just kind of feel like the Heat lost it in the last game. Not only did they just not, they really haven't played a good last 3 games, but they've been typical them, where, you know, they're Jekyll and Hyde. They started off the series great, and now they're doing shitty. And I just feel like the way that last game ended, I don't know if they're going to be able to bounce back tonight. And so I have Boston winning this one tonight and moving on to the NBA Finals. And like I said, the Denver Nuggets, they've been sitting pretty, waiting for their opponent in the NBA Finals. The way I see it, though, is I don't think it matters who the Denver Nuggets get. I think they're going to win the NBA Finals. And I think it's going to be pretty easy. I mean, you look at what's going on with not only Nikola Jokic. I mean, the dude is a triple-double king at this point in time. It's not just him, though. Jamal Murray, this guy has stepped it up. He's been that dude. Then you've also got Aaron Gordon. He's been having great games. Just this team has really stepped it up. They're playing cohesively. They play great offensively. They're great on the rebound. They're great in the paint. They can make the three-pointer. They play great defensively as well. Whereas looking over at the Eastern Conference teams, the Boston Celtics have done what the Boston Celtics have done this entire playoffs, and that is just they're treading water the entire time. It doesn't even look like they want to win a series until the series is out of their reach. And then the Heat, like I said, they've been Jekyll and Hyde all season long, so I can't trust them in a series, and I don't think they're moving on tonight anyways, but even if they do, I don't think either one of these teams is going to be able to go up against Denver in a 7-game series and get the win. Now, I wouldn't be surprised if Denver starts game one off slow because they've had so many days off, but it could just be the exact opposite. And they're just like, we're resting, we're nice and rested. Whereas the Celtics and the Heat, this is a battle. They have gone 7 games. No matter who wins this one, they've been pushed to the brink. And so I kind of feel like that's going to be, regardless of who wins, that's not going to be good going up against the Denver Nuggets. But also, the Nuggets have been the best team all season long. They've been the most consistent team. Nikola Jokic, he's been one of the best players. Then all of the players around him are stepping it up. Their coach knows what's at stake here. And I just feel like the Denver Nuggets are the better team. And so I am picking the Denver Nuggets, whoever they face off against, whether it's the Celtics or the Heat. I think they'll win the finals in 6 games. And the NBA Finals do begin on Thursday night. So we'll see what happens, where we're at after game one on Friday's show. But it's going to be an interesting Eastern Conference Finals, but I think it's going to be an interesting NBA Finals as well. And I expect Denver to actually get their first championship in the NBA ever. That'll be crazy for them since they've never even seen their team in the NBA Finals. So just the fact that they're there right now is a big deal. But they're a damn good team, and I don't think either the Celtics or the Heat are going to have a shot against them. But we'll see on Friday. All right, now let's move on to baseball and the top 10 MLB power rankings for this week. Beginning at number one, the number one team has held it down all season long, and that is the Tampa Bay Rays. Overall record of 39-16. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took a series against the Toronto Blue Jays and the Los Angeles Dodgers. They still lead the league in runs with 335 runs, so they are just lighting it up offensively. You've got Randy Arozarena, who continues to have an amazing season. But then you also have Yandy Diaz, who has just been on fire. He's batting a .327 with 12 home runs and 39 RBI on the season. And then you also have their starting pitcher, Shane McClanahan, who has just absolutely dominated the season. He's got 8 wins, a .197 ERA, and 75 strikeouts on the season. Basically, the Rays just continue to do it offensively, defensively. Their starting pitching is locking it down. The bullpen is great, and the Tampa Bay Rays have just looked great from start to finish. And yes, they've had their little lulls and their little ups and downs throughout the season, but they have really maintained their dominance from day one all the way up until the end of May here. Then at number two on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Houston Astros, overall record of 31-21. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost a series to the Milwaukee Brewers, but then they swept the Oakland A's. And their pitching, their starting pitching has been solid this season. You've got Christian Javier, who's got 6 wins with a .297 ERA and 67 strikeouts on the season. And then you also have Framber Valdez with a .238 ERA and then 77 strikeouts on the season as well. But then you also have Yordan Alvarez. This guy is raking it. He is at the top of the league in pretty much every category this season, batting average, home runs, RBI. The guy just continues to rake. And just the Astros looking dominant still at this point in the season. Then at number three on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Atlanta Braves. Overall record of 32-21. They're 5-5 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost the series to the Los Angeles Dodgers, but they won the series against the Philadelphia Phillies. Man, this team is stacked to the ceiling. They're going to be getting Mike Soroka back this week. Their starting pitching just gets even better. But you have Spencer Strider, who just has been, he had a phenomenal rookie season last year, and the guy just gets better this year. He's got 5 wins on the season, .297 ERA, and leads the league in strikeouts with 106 strikeouts in the season. The next guy close to him in the league is with 77 strikeouts. That's Valdez. So, like, that's how many strikeouts Strider is getting this year. And then you've got Ronald Acuna Jr., who is just raking it in. He's batting a .333 with 11 home runs and 30 RBI. But, I mean, the Braves aren't having any issue scoring. As I've continued to say all season long, I basically point out a new player each time I discuss the Braves because they have so many guys who step it up each and every week. And but, obviously, their shining star is Spencer Strider. I feel like that guy right now should be the NL Cy Young leader right now at this point in time. I mean, I know it's still very early in the season, but the guy has 106 strikeouts already on the season. So Braves still looking good. And then at number four in my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Texas Rangers. Overall record of 33-19. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they won a series against the Pittsburgh Pirates and the Baltimore Orioles. And this team just is, they're just keeping it going. They're just keeping it moving as they should. You've got Yavaldé just continuing his great season with 6 wins, a .260 ERA, and 66 strikeouts on the season. And then Adolis Garcia as well. He has 14 home runs and leads the league in RBI right now with 49 RBI. The Rangers are second behind the Tampa Bay Rays still in runs. So the Rangers, they are just looking really good right off the bat with Bochy at manager. And like I've continued to say since the beginning of the season, I am not surprised by that because I'm a San Francisco Giants fan. I know all about Bruce Bochy. The dude won us 3 World Series rings, 3 of them. And don't be surprised. I wouldn't say this year the Rangers will win the World Series. Now they could at this rate that they're playing, but I expect the Rangers to make some major noise in the postseason. But next year, they're probably going to be my pick for World Series, especially depending on what kind of moves they make. But Bruce Bochy, he just always turns around every team he goes to. And the Rangers have been one of the best teams so far this year. And they're in a tough division. You know, they're in the division with the Astros, the defending World Series champs. But then you also look at it, the Angels are playing really well. And they're also in my top 10 this week. So I've got three teams from that same division in the top 10 this week alone. So, I mean, the fact that the Rangers are the top team, by the way, in that division, even though I put the Astros above them, it's really just because the Astros, they just get a little bit respect from me because they're the Astros. But the Rangers are right there with the Astros. Then at number 5 on my top 10 MLB power rankings at the Baltimore Orioles, overall record of 34-19. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took a series against the New York Yankees, but lost a series to the Texas Rangers. They really are just keep it moving. I keep thinking the Orioles are going to fall off, kind of like the Pirates have now. You know, the Pirates started off the season really hot, and now the last month they have come back to earth. And the Orioles are the exact opposite. They've still maintained their dominance. I've pretty much had them about number 5 all season long in the power rankings, and they just are keeping it up. They've got their catcher, Adley Rutschman, who's having a great season, batting .273 with 8 home runs and 26 RBI on the season. But then you also have this Austin Hayes guy who's batting .322 right now, and he doesn't have a lot of home runs or anything, but the guy is getting on base and making big plays for this team in the big moments of the game. And the Orioles are just continuing their dominance as well in yet another tough division in the American League, because it's really funny to compare the American League and the National League right now, because the American League is just blowing away the National League right now. The National League, it was actually tough for me. I only have 3 National League teams this week in the top 10 because they're not doing that well compared to the American League, or just there's so many winning streaks and teams doing so well right now that I struggled to find National League teams to put in the top 10 this week. So at number 6 this week on my top 10 MLB power rankings, the New York Yankees, overall record of 32-23. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they lost a series to the Baltimore Orioles, but won a series against the San Diego Padres. Aaron Judge is just continuing his amazing hitting, batting a .291 with 15 home runs and 35 RBI on the season. But then it's their starting pitching that really is looking pretty solid. And right now it's led by Cole, of course, with 6 wins, a .293 ERA, and 79 strikeouts. You know, the Yankees do continue to battle through injuries, but they seem to be back on track and getting the wins that they need to get. Whereas they, a couple weeks ago, they were not looking so hot, but they're back to their winning ways again. Then at number 7 on my top 10 MLB power rankings are the Los Angeles Dodgers. Overall record of 32-22. They are 4-6 in their last 10 games. So like I said, it was a struggle for me to find National League teams to throw in the top 10 this week. And even the Dodgers were a difficult one to throw in just because they're not doing that well as of late. But I mean, when you look over at the National League, they're still doing pretty decent. This last week, they won a series against the Atlanta Braves. They won a series against the Atlanta Braves, and then they lost a series to the Tampa Bay Rays. And Freddie Freeman, man, he's really turned out to be money for the Dodgers right now. He's batting a .335 with 9 home runs and 32 RBI. And then Clayton Kershaw just continuing to, in the twilight of his career, be a dominating pitcher with 6 wins, a .332 ERA, and 75 strikeouts on the season. So he's right up there in the league with the top strikeouts. I believe he's top 5. Definitely top 10 in the strikeouts so far this season. But, I mean, Kershaw, with all the injuries he suffered throughout his career, he still is one of the best pitchers in the league and still looks really good. Then at number 8 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Seattle Mariners, overall record of 28-25. They are 7-3 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took a series against the Oakland A's and the Pittsburgh Pirates. They're getting some good pitching from Castillo, who's got 4 wins on the season and a .269 ERA with 76 strikeouts. And then they're also getting some power behind the plate from Travis Kelnick, batting a .278 with 10 home runs, a 26 RBI. The Mariners are pretty much just picking off where they picking up where they left off last season, where, you know, they made this really solid playoff run. They did fall short in the playoffs, but they really are starting to put a season together, and we'll see what they're able to do towards the end of the season. They are in a really tough division, but, you know, you never know the way things are going to go as the season wears on. Then at number 9 on my top 10 MLB power rankings of the Arizona Diamondbacks, overall record of 30-23. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took a series against the Philadelphia Phillies, but lost a series to the Boston Red Sox. Zach Gallen is just having yet another phenomenal season pitching. He's got 6 wins on the season with a .297 ERA and 75 strikeouts on the season. And then you've got Lourdes Gurriel Jr. He is just knocking it out of the park right now. He's batting a .315 with 8 home runs and 28 RBI on the season. I don't know how I'm still talking about the Diamondbacks, just like with the Orioles. I can't believe they're still here. And I don't know if they're going to be a good postseason team. I don't even know if I believe they could make it to the postseason, but they really have had a strong season so far. And it's amazing that we're still talking about them and we're heading towards June. And then rounding out the top 10 MLB power rankings this week, we have the Los Angeles Angels, overall record of 28-26. They're 6-4 in their last 10 games. This past week, they took a series against the Boston Red Sox, but just got swept by the Miami Marlins. Shohei Ohtani just having just such an amazing season behind the bat and pitching, with his bat. He's batting a .269, 12 home runs, 33 RBI on the season. And then it's at the starting pitching position, he's got 5 wins with a .291 ERA and 90 strikeouts on the season. So the guy is just, he's just so phenomenal. It's just crazy to see that this is happening in the league, and I love watching the dude. But then you also have Mike Trout, who is still raking it in as well. He's batting a .278 with 12 home runs and 28 RBI on the season. And the Angels, they've been up and down all season long. Who knows if they're going to be able to even make the playoffs, but they've been a very solid team so far to start the season. All right, now let's move on to a more serious topic. As you know, I don't usually like to bring up serious topics on the show. I don't like to turn this into, it's definitely never going to be a political show, but if, you know, somebody gets arrested or some type of fucked up shit happens and it starts becoming an actual legit story with the real legitimate evidence, I have to bring it up. You know, for example, the Deshaun Watson story from last year. You know, I had to talk about it, gave my opinions on it, and blah, blah, blah. Today we're going to talk about a topic that I did discuss last year when it happened. But now it's coming back up now. And it's actually one of the reasons why I personally wanted to bring it up is because I'm not of the mindset that you always have to believe the woman, whether she's been raped or abused. I do know that women can be liars. They can be two-faced. They could be scandalous. And if you're a rich man and you're in the public eye, there are women who purposely go after you just to try and get money or to just try and ruin your reputation. Or maybe there was an encounter where you were a one-night stand, but you're upset by that because you thought you were going to be in a relationship with them. And then so you lie about being raped or whatnot. And so I don't always believe when somebody is an accuser or when somebody's accused of something. But I just feel like I'm the type of person, I like to step back and I like to look at all the evidence, and I just don't always believe that the guy is the rapist or the beater in every single situation. You need to assess every situation with all the evidence that is provided to you. And so last year we had a punter named Matt Areza. He was drafted by the Buffalo Bills last year, I believe in the 6th round of the draft, and he was basically, they were calling him the punt god. Now, it's very rare when we even discuss punters, because punters and kickers, they're very interchangeable. They're a dime a dozen. They play a role in the game, but if they start to suck, you just give them the old heave-ho, and they don't get... They're just very replaceable to most of us. They aren't a quarterback on the team, like Deshaun Watson and others, or just even a star player. If you are a star player, of course, you always get more leeway than others, and you're given more chances. And I'm sorry, I know that's very upsetting to people, but sorry, that's life. If you're more valuable, especially like we're talking about football, if you're more valuable to the team, they're going to give you more leeway, and that's just how it is. That's how it is in all of life. And if you haven't learned that, well, you should open your fucking eyes, because that's life. So, but anyways, dude was drafted last year, and during training camp, he was sued in a civil lawsuit, basically saying that he participated in the gang rape of a 17-year-old girl. Now, in the state of California, the age of consent is 18. So 17, if you have sex with her, that's statutory rape. Also, rape is rape. It doesn't matter how old you are. If you actually were gang raped, you were raped. So those were the charges against him. And the Buffalo Bills, basically, once the charges, you know, came out, they released him. Because at the time I agreed with the release just because he is a punter. They're a dime a dozen. It doesn't matter how good you are or whatever. A punter's a punter. Who the fuck cares? Whereas in the case of Deshaun Watson, you are going to give the dude more of a chance because he's the quarterback of the team. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He's a draw, whether you like it or not. And you can even mention other times, like Ben Roethlisberger years ago, quarterback of the Steelers. He's had rape accusations against him, and the Pittsburgh Steelers stuck with him all the way to his retirement. So, of course you're going to, because Ben Roethlisberger won them Super Bowls. He won them playoff games. He is worth a lot more to the team than a punter is. That was my reasoning, even just whether he was guilty or not. I'm like, it's a punter. Who the fuck cares? Why would you want this drama hovering over you all season long? Blah, blah, blah. So a couple weeks ago, I didn't bring it up on the show just because I had a lot going on, and I thought there were more other topics that needed to be brought up. But I definitely wanted to talk about this because I always like to give the opposite side of the story, not just that people don't listen to women who have been raped. And I mean, the majority of the time, we've seen it in many numerous occasions. Most of the time, women aren't believed. It's just usually a bad situation for women or victims in general of rape. Most people don't believe you, and it's just a very horrific process. If you take it to court, it's just a really horrific process, whether it happened or not. But it's just bad. It's usually just awful for whoever the victim is, especially if you're a woman. But in this case, it's the exact opposite. A dude's career was completely fucked up because the evidence shows that this woman is a lying fucking whore. So a very thorough investigation was actually released. We got a ton of evidence because, like I said, this was a civil lawsuit. This was not criminal. And the reason why it never went criminal is because of all this evidence that was just recently released a couple weeks ago. And there's extensive articles on this. So it's very... To me, I put together all the evidence, and that's why I'm calling her a lying whore, because I think she's just as awful as somebody who rapes somebody, because she just ruined a dude's career by being a liar. And so here's the evidence that was just recently released against Matt, or in favor of Matt Araiza. First of all charges there were no charges brought against him, or all were dropped, because there was tons of video evidence from the night in question. This was a party that Matt Araiza was actually at, but all the videos, there are multiple videos from this night from other people's cell phones, and then also CCTV from the home. So essentially, he wasn't even there. He was at the party, but the time in question that the girl gave is he had left like an hour and a half before that. So he wasn't even there when she said this happened, this rape occurred. And so there's one thing, but the reason why I'm calling her a whore is because she is a whore. And yes, I know in these days, this day and age, we're not allowed to quote slut shame, but I'm sorry. This chick on camera, this is what is on camera, the evidence provided to the police is in a multiple of these videos, she is having sex with different men. And in this night in question, in these videos, she has sex willingly with at least four other men this night. Four separate men in one night. So I'm sorry, you are a whore. You could do what you want with your body. I give zero fucks. If that's the way you want to roll, you do you, boo-boo. But you are a whore. You have sex with four different guys in one night. That equals whore. You don't deserve to be raped. I will put that out there. You do not deserve to be raped. Just let everybody know. If she had sex with five guys that night and the four were consensual and five was rape, she was still raped. She's still a whore, but she was a raped whore, in my opinion. And I know I'm probably pissing people off right now. Couldn't care less. This is my viewpoint. And this comes from a bitch who, I'll tell you straight up, I have never had sex with four separate men in one night. And I will never have sex with four separate men in one night because that's disgusting. But I digress. That is what is on these tapes, though. And she's not just having sex with them. She's approaching these men, telling them she's 18 years old, because that's another aspect. Like I said, she is 17, but she told everybody at this party she was 18. So if you aren't aware, when it comes to a statutory rape case, if that happens and you can't tell she's 18 years old and she's telling everybody she's 18 years old and you can't tell she's younger than that, I'm sorry, case closed. That you don't know that she's not 18. She's presenting as she's 18, but that's on her actually in that point in time. And so, sorry that aspect of it's out the window because she's been presenting that in multiple videos. But like I said, in these videos with these four other dudes she's having sex with, she's approaching all of them like, "Hey, you want to have sex?" She does it with them and then moves on to the next one. So essentially, this guy lost everything due to a lying whore. In my opinion, she's a lying whore. But I think she's the scum of the earth just because, you know, like I think Deshaun Watson's the scum of the earth. She's in the exact same category to me because I don't know why she said he raped her. My guess is because she just saw that he was getting all this attention in football and that she thought it was going to be a nice little easy money grab for her. And so she went ahead and tried to take a shot and sue him. And sucks for you, bitch. You were caught on tape having sex on tape willingly. When it's being recorded, by the way, she knows that she's being recorded having sex with these dudes as well. This is all straight up evidence that was presented to the police department. So I'm sorry, Matt Araiza, that your career was ruined by one dumb slutty skank ass whore, but that's why I wanted to bring this up, because it's not just that all women deserve to be believed. I think you need to take every single situation, take a look at all the evidence presented, and then make your assumption after that. And after looking at all the evidence in this case, Araiza is obviously at least innocent of rape. You know, in this case, I mean, when it shows that he's not even there and she's willingly having sex with all these other dudes, I'm sorry, that's really difficult to prove that you were raped in that instance, especially when he wasn't there. So it's sad to see, because no matter what, even if he gets another shot in the league, which I wouldn't be shocked if he did, but I mean, he, like I said before, he's just a punter. Who the fuck cares about a punter? He might get another shot. But even if he does, this is going to follow him forever. And what I also think is funny about it is when this first happened, you would get all those lectury, high and mighty articles about how the Bills have to release this guy and the high and mighty bullshit. But nobody is really talking about that he's innocent and that his entire career was fucked over by a dumb, skanky, fucking scandalous ass bitch. That's sad and disgusting. And it's sad that there isn't as much outrage over it as there should be, because this dude's life was ruined, completely ruined. I mean, he was going on to be an NFL football player, And who knows what he could have gone on to be, but now forever, this will be attached to his name no matter what. Even if, you know, that there's still people who are going to believe it and just throw it out there just to do that. But that's what really sucks is this happens both ways, where women aren't believed and they're raped. But then there's also women out there who are scandalous ass bitches who just want the money grab. And I just felt like I had to bring it up because I've brought up multiple stories about other rapists like Deshaun Watson or, you know, what's happened with the Washington Redskins front office and Daniel Snyder over the years. I'll bring it up I'll discuss that side of it. But then when I saw this in this evidence about just how this guy got completely fucked over, that sucks, and that's sad. And like I said, I hope he now gets a second chance because he does deserve it. But at the same time, as I said, he's just a punter. And who gives a shit about the punter? But it's sad that somebody's life was completely fucked over by a liar. All right, now let's end on a much lighter note today. You know, ever since in 2020, we did get the Michael Jordan, a six-part docuseries on his entire career. I, as a basketball fan, really enjoyed it because it was nice. It was cool to get like just this inside look, especially with Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan is, even though he's probably the biggest superstar basketball ever had, he's still like the GOAT. If you will, I mean, depending on where your rankings are, some people got him number one, some people have him just in their top three or five. I had him at number two behind Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, of course. But it's really difficult to deny the impact the dude has had on the game. And so, but he's always been a very private person. So it was really cool to see this docuseries and just kind of get his perspective on his entire career. And just a breakdown of all the championships he won and just what happened in between when he quote, retired and went and played baseball and just how his father's death affected him and blah, blah, blah. But one thing that happened after this is we found out just how bitter his ex-teammate Scottie Pippen is after all these years. Now, for some reason, he was kind of upset with how he was portrayed in it. I'm not exactly sure exactly what his beef was at the beginning. I'm sure he has said it, but in my opinion, I don't think he was portrayed in a really bad way. But then again, what the fuck do I know? He it's his feelings, not mine. We all know Scottie Pippen played a huge role as to why Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls won those six championships. Obviously, it's undeniable. But then you also had great players who played with them, like Dennis Rodman or Steve Kerr, Horace Grant. There's a lot of guys who played with them along the way who really made an impact, just like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. A lot of people, they just were Batman and Robin, but Scottie Pippen has always been given respect from everybody in the league just because he was a great player. But, you know, if you play on the team with Michael Jordan, you're never going to be above Michael Jordan. He was an amazing player, no matter what you think, whether you liked him or not. You have to respect what MJ did for the game and to the game, and just where we are today is because of Michael Jordan. At least with the NBA and hell with branding just in general. But one thing we definitely learned with Scottie Pippen is how bitter and upset he is with Michael Jordan about something. Most notably, I guess, just how he was portrayed in that docuseries. Like I said, I didn't think it was bad, but I'm not Scottie Pippen, so I can't speak for him and his feelings. But apparently his feelings were really hurt in that. And so, you know, he's over the last couple of years since that docuseries came out, he's done interviews where he's said negative things about Michael Jordan. And they're petty negative things. And it's just been amusing to me to see them. But it really took the cake just in this last week when he, quote, said Michael Jordan was a horrible player before he joined the Chicago Bulls. And it's just, no, he wasn't, number one. He did win a national championship in college, And he was the focal point of that team. That's really unquestionable right there. So let's start there. And, you know, Michael Jordan's career didn't start off stellar, but it started off as a Michael Jordan career would start off. I'm sorry. Michael Jordan is the GOAT for a reason. And there's a reason why we discuss him still to this day, because he's the GOAT, especially of this era and especially of this team. And I'm sorry, Pippen, but you were the number two guy on this team. But he did say that MJ was a, quote, horrible player before him. But I would like to point out some of Michael Jordan's stats before Scottie Pippen joined them, just his season before Scottie Pippen joined the Chicago Bulls. He averaged 37.1 points per game, which was actually a career high for Michael Jordan. So I don't know how horrible that is. Maybe he's talking about rebounds. He averaged 5.2 rebounds per game and also 4.6 assists per game and averaged a 50% shooting field goal percentage. So I don't know how that's horrible. And really the only thing that increased after Scottie Pippen joined the Bulls was Michael Jordan's efficiency rating did go up and his assists per game increased. But other than that, there wasn't much of a deal there. But it's just amusing to me to see how bitter Scottie Pippen is. And it's just like, dude, fucking move on. You were second to Jordan, whether you like it or not, and just own it. Who the fuck cares? If you were second to Jordan, you were second to Jordan. You're on literally one of the greatest teams of all time. What's your beef, dude? Really? Did Michael, like, not invite you to a birthday party or some bullshit and you're just really upset? Did he skip you in the cigar pass-around circle or some shit? Is there some little petty bullshit that you're really upset about? Because I can't figure it out. But ever since that docuseries was released in 2020, Scottie Pippen's been a bitter bitch. And just to see him call MJ a horrible player at any point in his career is just ridiculous, because we all know the only time MJ was, quote, horrible in his career was when he was benched in high school for that 1 year. And then he was pretty bad with the Wizards as well. But, I mean, that was just because he couldn't let go. But, I mean, as far as those championship years, and hell, even before the championship years, we all know Michael Jordan was the GOAT, and Scottie Pippen just needs to fucking move along and just enjoy your six rings that you won with Michael Jordan, because we all know you wouldn't have done shit without Michael Jordan either, dude. So, although it's just funny because, like I said, there were other players and also a legendary coach along this way. I mean, they had Phil Jackson as their coach. I did mention Steve Kerr, Horace Grant, Steve, and just all the rest of Dennis Rodman. They had so many other phenomenal players outside of Jordan and Pippen. So, yo, Pippen, just get the fuck over it. Nobody else cries about their rings with Jordan. You don't hear Steve Kerr crying about it. Now the dude went on to become an excellent coach and be one of the best coaches of all time. So why don't you just take your failed marriages and shut the fuck up and just enjoy your legacy. You won six rings. You were literally a part of one of the greatest teams ever. So, and you got to play with Michael Jordan, and maybe you're a little bit bitter over it, but if I got to play with Michael Jordan and I got six rings on my hands here, I'd be looking at him like, thank you, MJ. But obviously that's not how Scottie Pippen rolls. He don't want to be, he doesn't want to be the Rhoda. He's the Mary. You're the Rhoda. I'm the Mary. Shout out to Romy and Michelle's high school reunion. Great, great movie. If you didn't know that reference of the Mary and the Rhoda, that's what I was doing. I know. I'm the Mary. You're the Rhoda. Anyways, guys, that's today's show. So enjoy the Eastern Conference Finals tonight. Game 7. Nothing better than a Game 7. So, going to be a good game tonight, and then the NBA Finals begin Thursday night in Denver. So, we'll see where we're at then. Enjoy the rest of the week of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Friday.